Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. This is the fifth and final program in our series of call-in shows leading up to the November 4th election. You can find our earlier election-related programs on public education reforms in the election, the impact of money upon the election, the other questions on the ballot, and the impact of public health issues upon the election on our call-in show webpage at KUNM.org. Today, with Election Day less than a week away, we will be taking a wide-ranging look at all things election-related, the ads, the money, the issues, the candidates, the endorsements, the trends, and the possible outcomes and how they may shape our future in New Mexico and beyond. I'm joined in the studio today by Emmy Award-winning independent New Mexico journalist Peter St. Cyr, University of New Mexico professor Lana Atkison, and Matthew Reichbach of the New Mexico Politics website, the New Mexico Telegram. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Yes, and thanks for being here. So Matthew Reichbach, let's begin with you. I read on the New Mexico Telegram website, which is www.newmexicotelegram.com, just nmtelegram.com.
Yeah, nmtelegram.
That you have been blogging about New Mexico politics since 2006. What precipitated your political blogging career?
Oh, well, it's actually my brother who is probably listening right now. He went to school to be a journalist, and he roped me into it, and somehow I've been doing it for the past 8 years or so.
Now, tell us a bit about the New Mexico Telegram, please, and how you perceive its role in the New Mexico political landscape.
Well, I look at it as a website where you can go to see the latest in the news. I don't necessarily do the long investigative pieces, but if you want to see what happened, the past an hour ago or 15 minutes ago, I think that my site's probably the one where you'll be more likely to see that.
And let's mention it's nmtelegram.com, and I believe we'll have a link to that up on our Call-In Show webpage. Professor Lana Atkison, you are the director of the Center for the Study of Voting, Elections, and Democracy at the University of New Mexico. Tell us, please, about the work of the center.
The center does a lot of different work regarding elections. One of the things we're focusing on, for example, this year is we're looking at Bernalillo County. We have people in the field on Election Day and in early voting, observing the election process. We have a survey of poll workers out in the field, and we'll have a survey of voters for Bernalillo County
I was actually looking at a paper this morning about the observation of Bernalillo County. That's been going on for some time, hasn't it? And probably more in depth than most places in the country?
We are definitely, in terms of consistently looking at what's going on in election administration, Bernalillo County is way ahead in creating a partnership that has been really productive for the citizens of Bernalillo County in terms of providing a better voting experience. We provide a lot of feedback. The county is very responsive and desires and is interested in improving the experience for voting, and we can chalk that up to the county clerk.
And as the director of the center, what is your role with the center?
I'm in charge of operations and making things happen and bringing in money, those kinds of things.
That's always important.
Yeah.
Now, Peter St. Cyr, you've been covering the political scene in Albuquerque and New Mexico since the early 1980s. In which of the state's publications do you publish most frequently?
I'm a contributor primarily at the Santa Fe Reporter, and most recently have been contributing stories to the new bimonthly newspaper here in Albuquerque, Albuquerque Free Press. And then I contribute columns to the Albuquerque the Magazine since 2007.
Now, I found the Albuquerque Free Press online when I was researching. Is it also a hard copy as well? Can people pick it up in hard copy, or is it solely online?
It is available mostly in print and okay, at 400 locations around the city. I get mine at Flying Star or at Manny's over here on the corner.
Okay. Well, now, Peter, looking at the campaigns that have been run this year involving both candidates and issues, and ahead to the upcoming election, what stands out for you? What stands out the most for you?
Well, I would say the lack of focus of any candidates really on big issues and the continued negative attacks on everybody. You know, if you live in certain House districts, have mercy on you with all the mail that's been coming in. And perhaps Gary King's inability as the Democratic candidate for governor to really raise any kind of money. you know, right after his surprising primary win, he got on the air right away. And I think that people who had, didn't think he really had a chance right there in June thought, wow, he's going to be on the air and he's going to be an aggressive, assertive candidate. And then he fell off the radar. At least on air.
You know, when we did our money in the election show, the disparity in money raised and money spent was pretty outstanding. It was like 7-1. So you're seeing that, among other things, as something that stands out for you. You've been covering politics in here in New Mexico since the 1980s. What is the biggest change you've seen in New Mexico politics over those approximately 30 years?
Wow, that's a good question. I would say that, certainly the amount of money that is being spent from dark money and from PACs and the decreasing role of the political parties in the process.
Mm. Now, Professor Atkinson, I know you've talked about observing Bernalillo County, but when you look at this election season as a whole, what stands out for you? What grabs you?
I would say it's the sort of the referendum on the president that sort of at the national level is at least affecting all of the races across the country. Usually midterms are somewhat a referendum on the president, and the fact that the president has, approval below 50% is just really affecting state races across the country.
How have you seen that impact present itself here in New Mexico?
Well, we have a number of interesting sort of down ballot races that are very close. We have questions about whether there's an enthusiasm gap between Democrats and Republicans and whether Democrats are going to turn out. That's sort of the ongoing question that I'm asked. Are Democrats really going to turn out this year? Or are they just, fed up, tired? They're just not going to go to the polls. And what is the impact of that? What's the impact of a weak ticket at the top, with King running and not providing the energy that sort of motivates and mobilizes people to the polls?
No, at what have you had students take a close look at, aside from the observation in Bernalillo and this, what you just spoke about here? What are students wanting to take a look at closely with regard to the election?
Marijuana.
I assume you mean the advisory question, but okay. So, I'm going to save this question because I want to address it to everybody. But that's, you're seeing that generating the most interest among students?
I've talked to my students. There's been tables out. I mean, it's definitely something that's being used in a sort of unique way to mobilize voters. And it definitely, there was some impact in terms of registration with regard to that issue.
And it's interesting because I get very little campaign literature myself, but I have gotten several pieces about the decriminalization issue. And again, it's a question asking, do you favor the county commission looking into ways to decriminalize or to support efforts on the state or county or local level. So that's, it's just fascinating to me. So Matthew Reichbach, let's get to you. How about for you? What stands out?
I've been really looking at the state house race to see who's going to take control of the state house. Because as we know, the Republicans haven't been in power since the 1950s. And even that was only 2 years. And then now they have a legit shot this year at actually taking control of the state house. And the state senate, it's not up for grabs, but it is kind of run by a coalition of conservative Democrats and Republicans.
Now, when you say that there's a shot to take the state house, what do you mean by that?
They need to take 3 seats in order to take control. They need a +3 gain this November in order to take control of the state house, take the speaker's chair. And once you take the speaker's chair, you have a lot of control in the state house. It's maybe the most important position in the state legislature.
Interestingly, there's that contested race, Representative Liz Thompson, and I was reading that there are people on a street that are in the wrong district. And so consequently, where we have something that may be such a close race, some people will be voting in that race who are not supposed to be voting. Did anybody else take a look at that and have a reaction to that?
Yeah, there was the Secretary of State sent out a press release about it the other day, actually, which is kind of funny because she's running against Maggie Toulouse-Oliver for Secretary of State. So it's kind of, is there a political element to this sending a press release out? But there is I think it was maybe 3 dozen voters that were affected by this, and 8 had already cast absentee ballots. So they're going to have to figure out what to do about this if it's an extremely close race.
And they'll probably wait to see the results to decide what to do?
I'm not exactly sure. I know that they said they're working on they fixed those who hadn't voted already. So it could just be down to those, you know, half dozen or so votes that have already been cast that need to be redone. And that's going to be kind of weird how they redo it. And we're seeing the same thing in the Navajo Nation, and that's a whole other story.
Yeah. Now, so you talked about the House races. Is that what you have been most interested in blogging about, and about what issues have you heard the most from your readers?
That's probably been one of the things I've written the most about, besides, of course, the governor's race, which kind of takes all the oxygen out of the room at times. But among readers, I've been really hearing a lot about the money in politics, about how all of a sudden these House races are turning into these kind of national referendums, like Dr. Atkinson said. We're getting this big money coming in that we didn't have 5 years ago. We didn't have 6 years ago. All of a sudden, we're getting these super PACs that are really concentrating on these specific House races that are spending, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on individual races that we didn't see before.
And again, another story in the news about blatantly wrong claims that appear in these races from outside groups. This is how someone voted. They say, I didn't vote that way. You can look at the record, but yet it's out there. I mean, that's that outside money.
Yeah, we saw that in the race for Stephanie Garcia Richard up there in Los Alamos, where one of the PACs run by Matt Chandler, who used to be a district attorney, now he's running a super PAC. He had a mailer that said she voted against this, or she voted for this, and she's like, no, wait, I voted against that. You can look it up. He's like, oh, well, we'll fix it in the next mailer. Damage is already kind of done.
Well, and I think he said, well, we may have made a mistake printing the vote, but we should have printed your answer to a question.
Yeah.
Because that was more indicative of your position. We have an early caller. And Peter, this one's going to be for you because it's Mike from Albuquerque who wants to challenge you on something that you said about the surprising election of Gary King. So, Mike, welcome this morning to the program.
Yeah, can you hear me fine?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Peter, my name's Mike. I was at the Democratic Party pre-primary convention. I think it was at the end of February, early March this year. And if you'll remember from that election that happened, Gary King only got 10% of the vote.
Yeah, it was 10.5%.
Yeah,
10.5%.
But, I mean, let's face it, he was beat by all four other candidates. We all kind of knew. I was one of the people that didn't vote for it. We all kind of knew what was going to happen. Gary King has huge name recognition in the state, and we all kind of knew that he'd be a disastrous candidate, and he has been. And
Well, it was the first time in
the idea that it was surprising. I think it was almost inevitable,
except for the fact that it was surprising. It was the first time in New Mexico history that a candidate that didn't get at least 20% an automatic name added to the ballot, and Gary King had to go and collect additional signatures.
He had plenty of signatures, sir.
Get on the ballot, but it is still the first time in state history that a candidate that didn't make it through the pre-primary process went on to win the primary. So, in a way, you know, the insiders were reluctant to support Gary King, like you said, in the pre-primary, but the general voters, you're right, bought into the legacy of the King family, which is a good legacy of public service.
And I hope people, especially the national media, because they're going to take this and say, oh, Susanna had this, you know, this wonderful win. Well, she had no opposition, and I'm just worried that it's going to affect down ballot people a lot because, you know, Gary King's a very nice guy, but he's been a disaster. And I had people in the party telling me flatly to my face early on, well, look, he's going to be the candidate. he's going to lose badly, and hopefully we'll never see him again.
All right, Mike. Well, thanks so much for your call this morning, and Mike certainly let his feelings be known. If you would like to be like Mike and join in our discussion about all things election, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to collinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on the Collin Show webpage at kunm.org. You may call our local number, 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. Or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. Tell us, what stands out the most for you regarding the campaigns and issues leading up to this election? We'll be back with you after this short break.
The Manhattan Transfer began crossing genres from the beginning, singing jazz, pop, rhythm and blues, doo-wop, and much more. By exploring all the places their voices can go, they continue to garner ever wider respect for their musical gifts, earning Grammy Awards and millions of dedicated fans. Come shine in the brilliance that is the Manhattan Transfer. Live in Popejoy Hall, Sunday, November 2nd. Get tickets and information at popejoypresents.com. A message from the tax-exempt Popejoy Hall.
Next time on Peace Talks Radio, how sports can sometimes point the way toward peace.
What you're seeing in the media, the violent response that seems to be appropriate in every other aspect, is not appropriate for us. And to me, nonviolence is the way. Are we changing the world at basketball in the barrio? I don't know that, but you know, I'm just trying to do my little part.
Also, why don't more pro athletes speak out on social issues and peace? That's next time on Peace Talks Radio, Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about all things election on this, our final pre-election call-in program. I'm joined today by Professor Lana Atkinson from the University of New Mexico, who is the director of the Center for the Study of Voting, Elections, and Democracy. I'm joined by Matthew Reichbach of the New Mexico Politics website, New Mexico Telegram, and by Emmy Award-winning independent New Mexico journalist Peter St. Cyr. And, you know, one of the things that I look at that I believe has shifted over the years with regard to elections is the prevalence of early voting and absentee voting. And I wanted to ask you, Professor Atkinson, early and absentee voting and the rise of both, something at which you have taken a look at the Center for the Study of Voting, Elections, and Democracy?
Yeah, early voting has been expanding since it has expanded, since we have invested more heavily in it. It's a lot better for the campaigns, I think, in terms of getting people to the polls. You know, with an absentee ballot, you have to worry about the mail. When you push people to the polls in a physical way, you know they're there. People like to vote in person because their ballot, they see visibly their ballot goes into a machine. People are a little less confident that their ballot is counted when they vote absentee. Everybody strongly thinks their ballot is counted correctly, so I don't want to, it's just a small difference. But there are those factors that really push people into the polls on voting day, and we really see the highest turnout on, that'll be on Friday and Saturday. The last 2 days, we see really high turnout in early voting.
One of the things that I think it's impacted, I see all these last minute ads and advertisements, and I wonder who they're addressed to if so many people have already voted early, because there is a large percentage, and I'll get to Matthew and we'll talk about those numbers, but I mean, is that something that's shifted? Are people advertising more earlier because of that?
They certainly are. I mean, certainly campaigns have pushed before sort of the Labor Day weekend. They sort of start after the primaries now. But what we see in early voting in terms of activity is that people really like to go to the polls. And those people who vote early are very committed voters. They're very partisan, so they know who they want. Those people who are waiting to vote, they're still potentially persuadable. There's still a few voters out there who are persuadable. And so, yeah, you want to keep focusing on them.
Now, Matthew Reichbach, this year's early and absentee voting numbers are something you've covered on the New Mexico Telegram website. Can you tell us even generally about those numbers, please? Because there was Professor Atkinson mentioned, you know, there being a concern, are Democrats actually going to go to the polls? Well, are Democrats actually going to the polls?
Well, yeah, there has been more Democrats that have been voting than Republicans, but we have to remember there are more Democrats than Republicans in the state, and Democrats are more likely to cross over and vote for the other party than Republicans are in the state. So we can see the raw numbers. You can go to my site, and I kind of update them nightly, the raw numbers by state or by county. And you can see, I think it was at last count, like 10, 10,000 more Democrats than Republicans had voted early as of Tuesday. But we don't know if, of course, we don't know if that means they're actually voting for Democrats. But we're talking about the early voting turnout, and I think it was in 2010, there was 49% of all voters voted early or absentee.
Here in New Mexico?
In New Mexico. So, and I think that we might see higher this year because it seems like the campaigns are definitely pushing more and more people to the polls early. We're seeing where in the past, candidates used to go on election morning and cast their ballots, you know, for their photo op. Now they're voting early. Now they're saying, oh, I'm going to go vote early on the Wednesday before the election. So they're promoting early voting in that way, in a way that they weren't even 6 or 7 years ago.
Well, let's bring in our next caller. It's Bill from Los Lunas. Good morning, Bill.
Yes, good morning to everyone. On the issue of the marijuana bill, let's legalize freedom. For Halloween, I was going to go as a Republican, but I couldn't stick my head in my ass. And voteless people are voiceless, powerless, and hopeless people. Thank you.
All right, Bill. Thanks for your call. And we'd ask people to please refrain from any profanity on the air, however mild you might personally consider it to be. So, Peter, continuing on this early voting topic to some degree, there were accusations that county commissions controlled by Democrats in Santa Fe County and Bernalillo County were including advisory questions concerning a mental health services-related gross receipts tax and marijuana decriminalization on their ballots in order to drive younger, more liberal voters to the poll, to the voting booth. Is there any evidence that these questions are actually motivating more people to vote?
Well, you know, Puff the Magic Dragon had his special days along the beach, but I don't think that the marijuana issue is going to have any magical effect in changing election outcomes this year. It may have had a bigger, more profound effect if the constitutional amendment to legalize recreational use of marijuana had been put on the ballot statewide. Of course, it didn't make it out of the Senate Rules Committee, and it was a way to get around the governor's potential veto of a legal measure because constitutional amendments go right from the legislature onto the ballot. But these advisory questions probably are going to drive some, like UNM students. But I think that it certainly will send in Albuquerque, because it's an Albuquerque initiative that was originally brought up by Ray Garduño, to signal the city council and the mayor about what their wishes are. You know, the Republicans have had their own similar initiatives. In 2010 or something, we had another advisory initiative on the red light cameras. And the council and the mayor listened, and we don't have red light cameras anymore. So I would predict that if there is strong, overwhelming support in favor of this initiative, at least in Albuquerque, that you're going to see Councilor Ray Garduño drop legislation right away, and the mayor is going to have to read the tea leaves. And, you know, if it passes with 60-70% support, then the mayor is going to have to calculate whether or not he really wants to veto something like that. Although he's been pretty clear that, you know, it's conflict with federal law and he has no interest in it.
Okay. Now, Professor Atkinson, you said that students are looking at the marijuana issue, but are you hearing that people are actually wanting to vote on it? Or is it pushing students to the polls?
I think it's, you know, it probably had a small effect. I mean, it's small enough that, you know, there's a lot of voters. We're talking hundreds of thousands of voters in New Mexico. So we're talking about a marginal difference in terms of outcome, no likely difference. But I do think it motivated some young people to get involved in a midterm election, which likely they'd sort of give it a pass.
Okay. All right. Let's bring in our next caller. It's Sarah from Albuquerque. Good morning, Sarah.
Yes. Good morning. Yes, sir. You know, I still want to remind the voters, like you said, we have 3 days of early voting left, today until 8 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, last 2 days of early voting until 8 p.m. And I just want to remind us that this time we had 3 Saturdays. It started on the 18th, the 25th, and still one more Saturday, November 1st. And You know, we were so lucky in Bernalillo County to have 19 polling places because of our population. So, you know, I strongly encourage early voting because, you know, every election day, there's always long lines, people always standing in line. We really don't have to do this because 111 Union Square, the county clerk annex was open starting the October 7th. So early voting starts on at least 4 weeks before the election day, so that one place always opens up downtown for about the first 12 days. So, you know, my thing is that sometimes we forget to vote, or on the election day we got so much stuff that comes up that we got to take care of. Or, you know, we could have tires that blow out on our way to the polling places. And for the first-time voters, they require photo ID. And if you get there at 6:30, you get in front of the line, and they tell you, well, you gotta go, you gotta bring your photo ID. This is your first time to vote. Well, by the time you come back, it's 7:15, the poll is closed. And they're going to be like, well, it's hasta la vista to your vote.
All right, Sarah, thank you so much for that reminder about early voting. We do appreciate it, and that way people can, those unforeseen emergencies might not stop someone from voting. Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller, Jan, who has an interesting question. Jan, go ahead and ask it, please. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. I'd like to hear some discussion more about what is how you're defining outside money. I've been getting all kinds of solicitations for congressional representatives from Arizona and Wisconsin, and so I'm being asked to be outside money. And these people will never represent me. I would never be able to email them because my zip code would immediately knock me out of communication with these people. So I'm just curious about the definition of outside money. It seems to me that it's coming from a lot more places than huge corporations.
All right. So hang on the line in case you have a follow-up with us, Jan. But let's start with Matthew Reichbach. Matthew, go ahead and address that question.
Yeah, I want to say, because I sign up for all the campaign emails from both sides just to see what they're sending out. And I think that some of them do end up selling their lists to other congressional candidates in other states. I was getting a lot from Arizona this year for some reason, and it was very hard to unsubscribe. But I think that when we're talking about outside money, we're talking about PACs. We're talking about these other independent expenditure groups, such as the 501c4s, I believe, that are spending money that we can't track, which is what we call dark money groups. But most of the time, I think this year it's these PACs and super PACs that are coming in. They could be in-state PACs. Most of them are. But that's what we talk about outside money when we're talking about money that isn't spent by the campaigns themselves.
Okay, so it's not necessarily outside of the state, but outside of the campaign.
Yeah, that's at least how I define it.
Professor Atkinson, you want to jump in on this question about outside money, how we might be defining it and its impact?
Well, we've seen a huge change since Citizens United in how groups are spending money in this rise of dark groups and groups going into local environments. Big money. What we've really seen is interesting is because corporations have not changed their spending habits. They're still doing the same thing they've always done. What we've really seen is these really rich people who've come in and start groups and spend a lot of money across the states.
Mm. Now, Peter, anything you want to add on this before?
Well, I've been following a little bit about what's going on in Kentucky. And, you know, as journalists, you're trained to always follow the money, and it's become nearly impossible. Mm. And so journalists there were trying to follow one of these 503C4 super PACs, independent expenditure committees, and it takes them to a P.O. box. And so it becomes harder to follow the money as a journalist, and that's always been frustrating for me here recently.
Now, Jan, if you're still with us, is there any follow-up you would like to have with the panel here?
Probably not particularly. I just I've just been interested in the idea that the blame for outside money, and I'm happy to blame it too, but it's just the definition, because now all of a sudden I'm feeling like I am outside money. But I do get the definition about it being outside the campaign, and thank you for that.
All right. Thanks so much for your call this morning, Jan. Let's go to our next caller in Erin, who at least has something she'd like to say to you, Professor Atkinson, and perhaps a question. Good morning, Erin.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Fine, and you today?
I'm good. So I just wanted to take a moment and kind of speak for the students in Albuquerque, and that we're interested in a lot more than marijuana decriminalization. There's a really cool movement going on that's supporting Palestine right now on campus, and maybe this program would have been a good time to bring up those things instead of just talking about students being interested in marijuana.
Well, and thanks for your call this morning, Erin. And I don't think, well, Professor Atkinson, I'm going to let you speak for yourself. You weren't, well, go ahead. Speak
yeah,
for yourself.
Students are interested in a lot of things. That's been a very visible factor on campus. It's one that's come up in my classes. And that's why I brought it up.
It's, you know, but this show, in my view, is talking about the election here in New Mexico and maybe how some of the national issues are affecting it. And unfortunately, you know, right now, Palestine's not on the ballot.
No, but we do have someone running for the United States Senate here. We've got Senator Tom Udall, and there are questions about whether the United States Senate is going to go Democratic or Republican. Are there not at this point?
Yeah, Matthew? I think right now, if you look at all the people who project on who's going to win, they're pretty much all saying that the Republicans are favored to win. It looks like it's in the mid 60% among 538.com, and the Washington Post has their own, and the New York Times has their own. They're all about mid 60%. But I think that right now it looks like Tom Udall, he looks like he's pretty safe. We've seen some polls that have shown Alan Way within single digits, but we've seen these polls coming in late when already there's been a lot of votes cast. And it's harder to make up even a small gap in the final days than it is to make up maybe a larger gap, you know, 2 months out. It's like in baseball, let's say, and we saw last night, it's easier to you could be down by two runs in the first inning, but you can still come back. You have better odds than if you're down by one run in the bottom of the ninth inning. So it's kind of like that for Way. He needs something huge right now if he wants to pull the upset.
And he may get that chance with a late debate between him and Tom Udall. I've always struggled with the fact that these debates come after early voting started. And, you know, they should be, in my view, scheduled before voting starts.
Well, and you know, and that's one of the things about early voting. The landscape has changed, but debate and perhaps advertisement landscape has not changed to reflect that. You mentioned this. Join KUNM tonight at 7 p.m. for our broadcast of the debate between Democratic incumbent Senator Tom Udall and his Republican challenger, Alan Way, hosted by New Mexico PBS. That's tonight at 7 p.m. on KUNM. I was at a friend's house in Santa Fe for dinner last night, and she got a call, recorded call. It was Al Franken asking her to make some calls on behalf of senators. And I didn't follow up. We were in the middle of dinner, but I didn't know whether it was asking her to call just specifically here in New Mexico or other parts of the country. But she hung up. She said, oh, sure, I'll do that. Has anybody else gotten that call from Al Franken by any chance?
My roommate has been getting a lot of phone calls on her landline. And yeah, I think that it might be Al Franken, but usually when we hear the recorded voice, we just kind of hang up immediately.
Okay. Well, and I'm just receiving clarification from our producer that there was an agreement, a late agreement between Tom Udall and Alan Way to have this debate. So it wasn't something that was scheduled way out ahead of time. And who do you think forced that issue? Which candidate?
It's always the candidate who's behind in the polls that wants a debate. They always want to get their name out there, maybe force the person that's ahead into a gaffe. So Alan Way's campaign was really pushing it. And I think a lot of journalists were saying, you know, we pressured Richardson into debating in 2006 when he never debated Dendall. And the same thing. They're asking, why wasn't Tom Udall debating Alan Way until shortly before early voting ends, when, as we know, half of the votes will already be cast?
What do we know about this debate, its format? Is it traditional? Can they question each other? Or is it... what do we know, Matthew?
It's the same format as the congressional debates that we saw with moderator Sam Donaldson. The debate was actually taped last night, so both campaigns have already told me that they won the debate. So we can look forward to that. But yeah, it's more of a traditional debate. Like, if you saw any of the congressional debates that were on KUNM and KNME and all the public radio and TV across the state, it's the exact same format as those, I believe.
We're talking about all things election-related today. I'm joined in the studio by Matthew Reichbach, whose voice you just heard, of the New Mexico Politics website, New Mexico Telegram. I'm joined by University of New Mexico professor Lana Atkinson and by Emmy Award-winning independent New Mexico journalist Peter St. Cyr. If you would like to join in our discussion, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on the Call In Show webpage at KUNM.org. You may call our local number, 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. Tell us, have you voted? Will you vote? Are you voting for change or for things to stay the same? We'd love to have your input on our discussion. I do also want to mention that we'd love for you to check out KUNM's election coverage, including audio of congressional debates, the League of Women Voters, Attorney General, Secretary of State Forum, public health election stories, and the KUNM Voices Behind the Vote series. You can click under News online at KUNM.org. Then on election night, we'll bring you NPR special coverage live from Washington, D.C., along with live local coverage from KUNM and New Mexico PBS. We'll have live updates on statewide and local races. That's Tuesday night, November 4th, starting at 7 p.m. on KUNM. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back with you in just a few moments.
Saturday, November 8th at Pope Joy Hall, the New Mexico Philharmonic goes to the movies. Larger than life, this is the soundtrack of the stars. Star Wars, Star Trek, and James Bond 007, Lord of the Rings, Jurassic Park, and many more. It's a night of Hollywood's greatest hits as Stuart Chaffetz conducts the NM Phil. Hooray for Hollywood, Saturday night, 6 p.m., November 8th at Pope Joy Hall. Information at nmphil.org. A message from the tax-exempt New Mexico Philharmonic.
Support for KUNM programming comes in part from our contributing listeners and by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about all things election-related. And let's go ahead and bring in a caller to our program. It's Glenn from Hemis Springs. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning. Thanks for having this. Yesterday I listened to the other NPR station in town, and they bring the Diane Rehm Show and Fresh Air. And both of those programs were dealing with the big money messing up our democracy all over the country. And one of the people commented how it's like 100 super mega-rich wealthy people doing this. And that made me think last night when I went on Facebook and saw Sally Alice Thompson, 91-year-old lady, Navy veteran who takes seriously this whole thing of getting money out of politics. And she ends up walking 11 days, 60-some miles from Albuquerque to the Roundhouse in Santa Fe. And I think it's that kind of commitment to bring back our democracy. I personally believe we've lost it to the big money and Citizens United, but thank God for some people, a 91-year-old lady, doing what she did, and I admire folks, even Bill with his expletive, saying it like he feels it and saying freedom has got to be where it's at. So that's my comment. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for your call this morning, Glenn. Anybody want to react to Glenn? Matthew?
Well, it did kind of remind me about something that that New Mexico In Depth, which is an investigative news website that they thankfully let me put some of their stuff on my website. They wrote something this week about the top 10 political contributors in the state, And it's a pretty interesting read. If you go to, I think it's nmindepth.com, you can find it. It's also on my site, like I said, but I think that I've wrote about 20 things since that published, so
yeah,
it'll be harder to find.
Interesting read for you. Why?
Well, it speaks to some of the people who make these huge contributions and to why they make the contributions. Do they feel like they're buying influence? Do they feel like they're buying access? Or do they just feel like, hey, this is something that I'm constitutionally allowed to do, and it's my right, so that's why I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a great look by a good data journalist that they hired.
nmindepth.org, I believe it is,
and that's .com,
and that's Sandra Fish who did that piece. We had her on the program on our Money and Politics show. Let's read an email comment from Katie Stone. It says, there are very partisan issues incredibly at stake in this election, women's issues and special education funding. New Mexico House and the governor races have larger implications because of who sits in those seats. And don't forget to flip the ballot over to vote for decriminalization. So, sometimes we do the bright lights shine on just a few things, but there are plenty of issues that are at stake for people that, and Peter, have you had a chance to talk to anybody about some of those lesser, and I only say lesser bright light shining on them issues?
Well, you know, I think that people had thought that maybe the changes in the behavioral health care approach and, you know, the Arizona company coming in and the allegations of fraud and how it disrupted that system would have been a bigger issue, because so many families here in New Mexico were impacted by that. And while it's discussed and, you know, in ads, it's not really risen to the top of some of the consciousness of voters that I spoke to. And it seems like that they're really reacting, you know, like in high school voting, is it a popularity contest? You know, who's nastier? Who's sent me more mailers and made an impression that way? And it's kind of regrettable that, you know, we don't take a more systematic approach to these kind of issues mm-hmm. that she's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and read another email question from Scott. Scott asks, can anyone explain the impact of the land grant permanent fund amendment? Is it just a new investment strategy? Will it increase or restrict spending?
Yeah.
Peter or Matthew? Let's get Matthew in, and then we'll go to Peter.
Basically, what this one does is it allows the state to invest more of the money in international funds. Right now, I think it's capped at 15%, is it? Peter's nodding, which doesn't work on radio. but it's capped at 15%. And this one, I think, would remove the cap completely. If you go to the League of Women Voters, they have a great voter's guide that explains all these constitutional amendments. I really recommend that people look at that.
There is another document out by the Legislative Counsel Service also about the arguments for and against all the constitutional amendments. And we did a program on the other questions on the ballot, and there's a link to that document as well. Peter, you wanted to talk about
that? Well, I was just thinking about the political implications in one of the races with the permanent fund, and that is that in the 2010 election, Ray Powell was able to galvanize like the conservative voters of New Mexico and the environmentalist, but they are not out pounding the street for him this time. And now he's in a very close race with Aubrey Dunn because he's refused to support opening up the use of spending some of that permanent fund to boost education and mm-hmm. early childhood education. And so that's kind of the political implication of one candidate's stand regarding the mm-hmm. use of the land fund and the permanent fund.
All right, let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Elena from Santa Fe. Good morning, Elena. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. My comment is that it's a question and comment. First of all, I'd like to know if any research has been done about the effects that negative ads really have on voters. For me, I read an article that really articulated how I feel about it. In the case of Governor Susana and all of her mostly negative ads, the comment in the article was that, you know, if a candidate has nothing to say other than negative things about their opponent, what does that mean about their own accomplishments? If they don't have anything positive to say about themselves, how accomplished have they really been in their term? And so for me, a negative ad from a candidate really pushes me to the other side. It's a complete turnoff. It does not have the effect that I think the candidate wants it to have on me. And I certainly was a supporter of Governor Martinez in the previous election, but I will not be voting for her this round. Can anybody speak to any research that's been done about the effect of negative ads on voters?
Elena, thanks so much for your call. Let's bring Professor Atkinson in to talk about that.
So there's a lot of research on the effects of negative campaigning and negative ads, and it's really quite mixed, and it's very contextually dependent. When you have very competitive races, they're very negative, but turnout increases because there's so much mobilization going on. You can also see effects sometimes where turnout is depressed. And, you know, that could be in a case, you know, perhaps like New Mexico, where we have such an offsetting, you know, we have two candidates who have very different spending opportunities. And so you're really one message seems really loud. So you can have sort of different effects from different choices. In general, what you want, you know, what campaigns are trying to do is they're either trying to make you angry and mobilize you to the polls, or they're trying to make you sort of afraid. And they're trying to make you fearful and make you stop and think, am I voting for the right person or if I'm voting for the wrong person?
Well, and campaigns have access to these studies. So there is a conscious decision about whether to go negative or not. No,
I mean, you go negative. You go negative to, you know, define your opponent. I mean, you know, everybody goes negative unless the race is like a 30-point difference or
if you have, like in New Mexico here for governor, where your opponent is not telling his own story, then you have an opportunity to jump in and tell the story for him and give the dialogue. Well, what do you want to tell us about ads, Peter?
I was thinking back to the 1980 Senate race where Harrison Schmitt, a former astronaut who grew up in Silver City, went off to NASA and came home and as a geologist ran for the Senate and won, replacing and upsetting really a long-term incumbent, Joe Montoya, who he'd been in the Senate for a long time. And so here's this upstart, celebrity senator, a Republican, and 6 years later, he goes negative against Jeff Bingaman, and he was warned not to go negative against this late-charging young Democratic former attorney general, maybe a sitting attorney general. And sure enough, that night, you know, Jeff Bingaman became the next U.S. senator and was there for 30 years, you know, unseating a one-term senator. So negative advertising can go both ways, like Lana said.
All right, let's go ahead. I'll read one more email question here from Chris. Alan Weber and Lawrence Real split the non-King vote in the primary. They could have been a stronger governor-lieutenant governor team. It was a similar situation for the Democrats when Richard Berry won the Albuquerque mayor's seat. Why does the Democratic Party let this happen? Matthew?
Well, it's the Democratic Party definitely probably did not want five people running for governor, but also it's not like the old days where you'd have a party boss that could come in and stop everybody from running, say, hey, you don't run and I'm going to give you this, you know, this plum position or something like that. That just doesn't happen anymore. Now it's more like, we're going to encourage you not to run, but we can't really force you. We don't have anything behind it. So then we see the five-person races, which are very unpredictable. And it turns out in this time, like an earlier caller said, it looks like name recognition kind of was the defining part of the Democratic primary.
Professor Atkinson or Peter St. Cyr, you want to add anything to that? And I think Matthew wrapped it up pretty nicely. I want to go ahead and make just a couple of announcements again. Join KUNM tonight at 7 p.m. for our broadcast of the debate between Democratic incumbent Senator Tom Udall and his Republican challenger Alan Way, hosted by New Mexico PBS. That's tonight at 7 on KUNM. You can check out all of of KUNM's election coverage, audio of congressional debates, public health election stories, KUNM Voices Behind the Vote series. Go to the KUNM.org website and click under news online again at KUNM.org. Then on election night, we will bring you NPR special coverage live from Washington, D.C., along with live local coverage from KUNM and New Mexico PBS. We'll have live updates on statewide and local races. That's Tuesday night, November 4th, starting at 7 p.m. on KUNM. And so, beginning our wrap-up here, Professor Atkison, what are you looking for on election night? What are you expecting? Tell us, as we get closer to Tuesday, what you are looking at.
Well, I think the interesting thing, of course, is going to be what does turnout look like? How did the races end up resolving? I mean, it's good to have an end. It's good to have an end point, and election day is an end point, and I want to encourage everybody to go out and vote.
Now, Matthew, how do the numbers for early voting stack up against previous years? I mean, does it look like there is a greater turnout, a lesser turnout? How can you characterize it?
I've actually asked the Secretary of State's office for some numbers on early voting from 2010, so hopefully I'm going to have something on that today, but I don't want to just speak off the cuff and be wrong, as I have maybe have earlier today.
Well, we'll go ahead and encourage people to look, you know, today or tomorrow at nmtelegram.com. They can find that out there. So what are you looking at? What's the big picture for you?
I think I said like the state house races. That's what I'm going to be looking at, to see who controls the state house and see what we see in January. I'm going to be live blogging about it at my website with the Santa Fe Reporter. So if you're online on election night, go ahead and go to nmtelegram.com. You can, and I'm going to be following all the key races. I think that race, the Secretary of State's race, which we touched on briefly, that's going to be a very close race and a very important race. And I think the other close race is one that Peter mentioned, the Commissioner of Public Lands, Ray Powell, is running for re-election against Aubrey Dunn. So those are some of the races I'll be looking at.
Well, let's stop at the State House for a second, because when we talk about control of the House, which party has it, what issues are actually at stake there in terms of what the House might pass, what we might see move on to the Senate? What are we talking about? What if the Republicans have control of the State House?
If they have control of the State House, then basically they have the ability to control who sits on what committees, what bills go to which committees, which can lead to priorities of Republicans that have went nowhere in the past, like let's say voter ID or school testing
and the driver's license.
Well, I was wondering
driver's
about that.
Well, yeah. Driver's license. Well, driver's license have well, that's the Senate, but driver's licenses have passed in the past because they've been able to chip off Democratic votes. But these issues that haven't been able to pass committees, all of a sudden they'll be able to pass committees because they'll be controlled by Republicans, and the Speaker of the House would be able to say, I want it to go to this committee, instead of this committee, and this committee. So, and then all the pressure will be on the Senate and Michael Sanchez to try to stop those for Democrats.
So we're looking at the rise of what might be called Republican sort of based issues and sort of the decrease in Democratic-led issues.
Yeah, everything that the Republicans have been pushing for years that have gone nowhere, all of a sudden would have real serious life. Like I said, the Speaker of the House has a lot of power, probably the most powerful position in the state legislature.
All right, and Peter St. Cyr, how about for you? What's the big picture look like for you, and what are you looking at as we get to Tuesday and on Tuesday night?
So it'll be interesting to see if Susana Martinez can not only win, but maybe get up to 60% and claim a mandate to give her capital, political capital that she can spend around the state and or with the legislature. No matter what happens, hopefully in the next and second term, if she's reelected, we'll have more of a broader based kind of coalitions and basically she'll have to work with the legislature.
Well, I was going
to
say
a little better.
But if there's a mandate, that doesn't necessarily precipitate the desire for a coalition.
Yeah, so. But you know, she may get a mandate with the public and be able to get the public to help her spend her political capital by pressuring the legislature.
Okay.
That's what I meant by that.
Okay.
Thank you for getting me to clarify it.
Thanks to our guests, UNM Professor Lana Atkinson, independent journalist Peter St. Cyr, and the New Mexico Telegram's Matthew Reichbach for making themselves available to our listeners. Thank you all. And thanks to our callers for helping to develop our discussion today. Thanks to our engineer, Jefferson White, our assistant producer, Kaveh Movahed. Michael Hess has handled our phones today. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Collins Show on 89.9 KUNM and KUNM.org, a public service of the University of New Mexico.